Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 351 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. I am going to be talking today about avian influenza, bird flu. I'm going to be talking about what sort of predictions we can make about the future, where we're likely to be, because it's been a ridiculous year insofar as, well, as far as I can tell anyway, it seems to have been far more prevalent. And obviously my position is one of the UK, so a European centric view, but I'm seeing that it's really taking hold in America at the moment. And from what I can gather, looking at the data, there's a really high risk that it's going to be found more and more in places like Australia and other parts of the world, that some of which haven't really had to deal with large cases up until now, and some of which already have, but maybe we'll be looking at more in the future. So we're going to be looking at the disease itself very, very briefly. You know, we're not going to be talking too much about the actual disease, but we are going to be talking about how it affects us as poultry keepers and what the future looks like. So that's what today's episode is going to be about. And before we get into that, I've got a little bit of housekeeping to just deal with right off the bat. And I just want to mention, I haven't really mentioned it enough, but there is a patrons only Facebook group. And if you are a patron of the show, you will get access to that group. It's one of the benefits of being a patron. Now, in my time doing this podcast, I've developed a fantastic relationship with so many listeners, and you guys really, really are the best. And I just want to take a minute to thank you all and tell you all how much I couldn't really put into words how much I appreciate all of the support you show me. Now, when in the past, people, you know, I've spoken to patrons, and not every patron, but most patrons I've had conversations with, and I've been told that, you know, they don't see the Patreon of this podcast as a transactional relationship. You know, I don't have tiers. I don't have it so that if you donate a certain amount, you get this. If you donate a certain amount, you get that. I just, I do the best I can to just put out whatever I can that I feel is relevant and quality and useful to people. And if people feel that they can support me in some way, then that's fantastic. But one of the things that you do get as a patron is exclusive access to the Patreon only Facebook page. But I've been told by some of the people who help me with that kind of things that I don't promote it enough, and it is one of the really premium benefits really of becoming a patron. So here I am promoting it. And you know, I also want to take a moment just to give special thanks to William and Vicky and Shannon and people who have offered to really help me with managing things like Facebook, because it's not something that I find very easy at all. So thank you to you guys, and thank you to all of you. Thank you to all of you that listen and that share the podcast and that consider becoming a Patreon, or just that download it every episode. I really appreciate each and every one of you. So thank you ever so much for that. I really, really do mean that. Right. That out of the way, let's get on to today's topic then. And we're going to be talking about avian influenza, as I've already mentioned. So why are we seeing these unprecedented cases of bird flu outbreaks coming across the world? And, you know, should we be concerned about them? Well, I'm going to be taking a lot of the information from an article in Nature, which is a science journal. And I'm going to see if I can't get a copy of that, because it's available as a PDF. I'm going to get a copy of that posted on the Facebook group. So I am going to be reading from that article, but I'm also going to be editorializing and adding a few opinions and comments and things about it as we go. So if you want to read the whole article, I will put a link in the show notes, but also it will be available on our Facebook group. So it starts by saying a highly infectious and deadly strain of avian influenza virus has infected tens of millions of poultry birds across Europe, Asia, Africa and North America. But scientists are particularly concerned about the unprecedented spread in wild birds. Outbreaks pose a significant risk to vulnerable species, are hard to contain and increase the opportunity for the virus to spill over into people. Now, since October, the H5N1 strain has caused nearly 3,000 outbreaks in poultry. So I'll just say that again, 3,000 outbreaks in poultry. That's not 3,000 cases, that's outbreaks. So some of those cases, individual cases, have led to the culling of thousands of birds, thousands of poultry. And more than 77 million birds have been culled to curb the spread of the virus, which almost always causes severe disease or death in chickens. And of course, that's something that we as homesteaders are going to be acutely aware of for protecting our flocks. Another 400,000 non-poultry birds, such as wild birds, have also died in 2,600 outbreaks. Now, that's twice the number reported during the last major wave in 2016-17. Now, researchers say that the virus seems to be spreading in wild birds more easily than ever before, making outbreaks particularly hard to contain. Wild birds help to transport the virus around the world with their migration patterns, determining when and where it will spread next. Regions in Asia and Europe will probably continue to see large outbreaks, and infections could creep into currently unaffected continents such as South America and Australia. Now, of course, when we're talking about the spread of this disease, we're thinking about migratory birds that kind of move it around the world. And that's what's caused the sort of shift in the hotspots, if you like, around the world. Is, you know, here in the UK, we have tended to get some outbreaks in the winter and then it tends to go away. However, this year, the outbreaks seem to have lingered on and we're still getting outbreaks, you know, right up to we haven't seen any in the summer yet because summer's only started a few days ago, but we were still seeing outbreaks just a few weeks ago still being reported. And that's not something that I personally can remember happening in the past. That's not to say it hasn't happened, but it's certainly not something I remember. Although people can catch the virus, infections are uncommon. Now, I'm not really going to focus on the human side of this insofar as humans actually catching the disease for two reasons. Firstly, the reported cases that there have been, and there's only been two reported cases since October, one in the UK and one in the US. But you know, in both of those cases, it was people in really close contact with lots of contaminated birds, people who work in the poultry industry. There hasn't been any cases of, or confirmed cases of it crossing over into the general public, people like you and I. And also in those cases, you know, it tends to just demonstrate itself as a very mild illness that's fairly easily cured. So the scientists are concerned that the high levels of virus that are circulating in bird populations mean that there are more opportunities for it to spill over into people going forward, though. So it is something that we need to sort of recognize. Now, the origin of the virus, it emerged, the H5N1 strain emerged in commercial geese in Asia around 1996 and spread in poultry throughout Europe and Asia by the early 2000s. By 2005, the strain was causing mass deaths in wild birds, first in East Asia, then in Europe. And since then, it has repeatedly infected wild birds in many parts of the world. And that's information from Andy Ramey, a research wildlife geneticist at the US Geological Survey, Alaska Science Center in Anchorage. Though he says repeated spillovers of H5N1 seem to have become more adapted to wild birds, it's now become an emerging wildlife disease. So in 2014, a highly pathogenic variant of this H5N1 called 2.3.44, for those of you making notes, emerged and started infecting wild birds without always killing them. And this created opportunities for the virus to spread to North America for the first time. And this lineage has since dominated outbreaks around the world, and that includes the current one. So the virus affects some wild bird species more severely than others. For example, some mallard ducks show no signs of disease, whereas the virus killed about 10% of the breeding population of barnacle geese in the Norwegian archipelago of Svalbard. And that was last year, and hundreds of Dalmatian pelicans in Greece earlier this year. So wildlife researchers are trying to understand why the virus affects different species differently, and they're particularly concerned about the virus's impact on vulnerable bird species with smaller populations or restrictive geographic ranges where it could actually have effects on the entirety of the species. Species that are particularly susceptible to infections such as whooping cranes and emperor geese are among these. So we also know that it's got a really high fatality rate in poultry, in chickens, and also turkeys we're seeing now. So to control the spread, better monitoring of infected birds could also sort of help to alert poultry facilities of the risk of future outbreaks. Although regions with large poultry or migratory bird populations are at high risk of further outbreaks, no matter how good their surveillance is. And this is one of the things that I really want to get to, because I've been trying to really dig down on this topic and find some predictive models. I'm trying to find some scientific research or something that kind of predicts where they think we will be in a year. And they all keep coming back to this idea that it doesn't really matter what we do, it's going to be prevalent. These outbreaks are going to be prevalent in places with large poultry populations and large migratory bird populations. So these are things that I can't see we're going to be able to get away from. So tracking disease in wild birds is research intensive, resource intensive, and challenging owing to just the size and number of these populations. And Dr. Hamilton suggests targeted surveillance in areas more likely to encounter the virus, such as popular flyways or breeding grounds. Now, an effective vaccination for poultry could help to stem the spread and is actually being used in some places around the world. I think in Egypt, although I will have to double check that. But along with decreases in the number of birds in production facilities, a wild bird virologist, Michelle Wheel at the University of Sydney in Australia, says the poultry industry can also continue to improve biosecurity by restricting entry to facilities, protecting their water resources, and decreasing contact between poultry and wild birds. So these are sort of the measures that we've been instructed to undertake by the government here in the UK when we are seeing really high levels of outbreaks here. And we've had two chicken lockdowns, one in each of the last consecutive winters. And the last one started earlier, ended later, and went much, much longer. And it does include all sorts of biosecurity measures, which we will definitely talk about later on. So although poultry populations can be culled to stop the spread of highly pathogenic avian influenza, researchers emphasise that wild birds should not be harmed to mitigate outbreaks. Killing wild birds to prevent future infections would not work because of the huge size and vast ranges of their populations. That's from Lina Awada, a veterinary epidemiologist at the World Organization for Animal Health. It could even make the situation worse because it would disrupt bird movements and behaviours, possibly helping the virus spread further. The same way we shouldn't be shooting bats because of coronavirus. The solution to this is not trying to kill wild birds, Wiley says. Researchers say that what is needed is a holistic approach that considers how avian influenza spreads through wild birds, people and poultry. Collaboration between public health researchers and animal health groups is vital for picking up spillover events into people. If we control this in poultry, we control this in humans, and it's likely that we control this in wild birds as well, Wiley says. So, as I've mentioned, I found it really difficult to find any sort of predictive models, anything that tells us what we can expect next year. However, I have found another article from and you'll have to forgive my pronunciation, but the Wageningen University in the Netherlands, and they've got the best information that I have been able to find on an article called Wild Bird Distribution, a Good Predictor of Avian Influenza Outbreaks on Poultry Farms. And again, I will link to this article in the show notes, and I will also get that link posted on Facebook. They write that the distribution of mallard ducks, mute swans and Brent geese can help predict the risk of avian influenza outbreaks on poultry farms. This conclusion is derived from research conducted by Janek Schrouder of Wageningen University and research in collaboration with Utrecht University and Sovon Vogelon Dorezek. Now, again, please forgive my pronunciation. So Schroeder studied the environmental factors of 26 outbreaks of highly pathogenic avian influenza in Dutch poultry farms and compared them with factors around 104 non-infected control farms. Using machine learning, the researcher analysed predictive indicators for avian influenza outbreaks. The density of wild birds proved to be the best predictive indicator. 19 of the 20 highest scoring indicators were related to wild birds. Of these, 17 were waterfowl and 2 were birds of prey. In addition to wild birds, one landscape feature, agriculture use, also contributed to the prediction of avian influenza on poultry farms. So again, you know, we need to bear in mind that we are all living in different areas on the globe, and this is based in the Netherlands. So we're talking about migratory species predominantly, but we're going to be talking about species in Europe. So if you don't get any of these species where you live, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're safe. But, you know, it's a good indication as to how the movement is happening and what we can expect to see in the future. So mallard ducks is where we start. And of the waterfowl, the mallard duck proved to be the most important contributor to the risk prediction, followed by the mute swan, Brent goose and widgeons. And in quotes, Schreeder explains, previously landscape features such as open water were mainly considered predictive factors. Landscape features play a role in the presence of wild birds and the numbers in which they occur in a particular place. My research shows that the presence and numbers of wild birds are better indicators for predicting an outbreak of avian influenza on poultry farms than landscape features alone. Despite the limited number of avian influenza cases analysed, 26 in total, the model appears to provide an accurate prediction of the risk of an outbreak, said researcher Schroeder. She believes that these analyses and the resulting avian influenza risk map are good tools for prioritising avian influenza monitoring. This knowledge also contributes to the targeted use of preventative measures to avoid the spread of avian influenza on farms. The maps can also help determine where poultry farms would be best located to minimise the risk of an influenza outbreak. So that's the, you know, it really does just go to say something that we probably kind of already could intuit from the information that we're getting, and it is that these migratory waterfowl are by far the biggest risk factor insofar as bringing these diseases onto our own property. So if you are near a source of water that tends to host things like mallard ducks or mute swans, then the general load of avian influenza in the wild bird population in your area, because of course it can spread to other species from these species, is just generally likely to be higher than anywhere else. So what we need to do, as always, is just be aware of our position in the world, be aware of our position in the ecosystem, and take sensible steps when it comes to our poultry. So when we are in chicken lockdown, we are told that our chickens must be basically inside, or at the very least caged or netted, so that they cannot interact with wild birds. But even if they're netted, we can't minimize that interaction down to zero, because wild bird droppings can come down through the netting. So there's lots of things we need to take into consideration, and it is about trying to do the best we can to create a biosecure bubble around our poultry, around our hens. And it doesn't really matter whether you're just keeping chickens, whether you're just keeping ducks, whether you're keeping turkeys, whether you're keeping geese. These species are all highly susceptible to this disease. So to protect our flocks, we need to just really think about trying to create that biosecurity bubble around them. So some of the things we should be doing and should be considering, even like in the UK right now, we're not in an avian influenza lockdown zone. You know, we're not in chicken lockdown at the moment, but we should still be considering some of these biosecurity measures, because there is still a risk of this in the air. And of course, if you are in, and when I say in the air, I don't mean that it's an airborne disease, I just mean a risk of it around us. And if you're in the US, then you're actually seeing this much more highly prevalent in the wild bird population right now compared to where we are here in the UK, just due to the vagaries of migration. And of course, it depends where you are in the US. I know that the US is a vast area that spans lots of different habitats and ecologies, so, you know, I am aware of that. But I think what we need to be thinking about is creating a, you know, a biosecurity bubble. Just like when we build a house, we create a bubble and we make sure that entire bubble is insulated and waterproof, you know, and we think about all the sides of that house. So we need to do the same with our hens if we're going to do as much as we can to protect them. So even now, one of the things that we try and do is we try and make sure that no wild birds have access to our feed, to our bird feed. So we do that by making sure that they have, well, in our case, we use treadle feeders, or at the moment, we actually have hens that are enclosed in runs rather than free ranging. But if you have free ranging hens and you're supplementing their feed, then try and make sure that the wild birds don't have access to that food. So you're not encouraging wild birds in to that area. And the same would go for water. You know, if possible, can the water be put in their coops rather than outside if you're free ranging your hens? Not all of these things are always possible, but they're always worth considering and doing what you can. And then the other thing is a little foot bath, an antiseptic foot bath that, or antibacterial, I'm not sure what the best stuff to use is. Speak to your farm supply shop or your vet, but something that you can literally wash your boots in before and after you go into your poultry, because then what's going to happen is you're not going to be tracking in any wild bird droppings from outside of your poultry. If you've got them all netted and protected from wild birds, we can undo all of that good work simply by walking in there. So everything we can do to increase the biosecurity of our birds is going to help. And of course, we're going to want to temper everything and make wise decisions just based on our location. And this comes back to some of the data I was talking about earlier. You know, it's going to depend what the prevalence is in the wild bird population in your area at the moment. It's going to depend what you perceive the risk to be, even if there aren't any outbreaks. You know, perhaps you live in an area that is really, really high in wild, waterfowl, and maybe you want to consider protecting your birds preemptively and taking some more steps than you might otherwise. These are all things that we can consider, but I think, and this is all conjecture on my part now, from here on in, I think that going forward, it's something we're going to be seeing a lot more of. I think we're going to see the cases spread. I'm not sure where we will be in 5 years, but I think for the next year or two, we're going to see really high cases of avian influenza. And I think we're going to see it in places that haven't seen it before necessarily. And the places that have seen it, we're going to see it harder, deeper and longer. So even if you don't have any experience with it yet, then from my experience, I would definitely advise you to do some forward thinking. So if you're in the UK, you could do some forward thinking towards next winter. If you're anywhere else, you could do some forward thinking towards whenever you think it's possible to come towards you. But be prepared to have that netting or that housing ready so that you can segregate your birds entirely from the outside population, because it may well be mandated, as it has been here in the UK for the last two winters. And even if it's not mandated, you may want to do it for your own, you know, good reasons, because you want to protect your flocks. Now, there's no upside to this. If your hens get it, it's almost certainly going to be notifiable, which means you will have a responsibility to inform people, to inform your local authorities. And even if you didn't, it's almost certainly going to wipe out a huge portion of your flock. And I think it's the sensible thing to do is to cull the animals if that were to happen. So just be aware. That's what this really comes down to. Be aware of the situation. Be aware of what you can and can't do. And make good choices, like I tell my children when we're not around. Make good choices. Anyway, that wraps up this episode on bird flu, avian influenza, and hopefully you found that information useful. If you've got anything to add to the conversation, please go over to Facebook, where at some point shortly after this episode is released, there'll be a topic around this where you can add your thoughts and your discussions. Right, thanks everyone for listening, and I will speak to you really soon. Cheers. This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.